Hello and welcome to the Wisepreneurs podcast. My name is Nigel Rawlins and I work with a range of women who are professionals in their field. They're often 50 to 60 years old who want to start their own business. In this podcast, I'll be interviewing a range of guests who will be able to tell you how they've done it themselves and others who will give you hints and ideas and tips and maybe the confidence you need to go out and start your own business. Today, I'm interviewing Gail Greatorex, a former senior manager with the Australian Government's Product Safety Agency. She made the shift to self-employment several years ago and now consults and advises on product safety compliance and regulations to Australian firms. Plus, she does a whole lot more that we'll find out about. Welcome, Gail, to the Wisepreneurs podcast. I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Product Safety Solutions.
Thanks, Nigel. Product Safety Solutions is my own business that I've set up as a consultancy and advocacy business, serving retailers, importers, and what few manufacturers we have in Australia to help them understand how consumer product safety works and what they do and what they need to do to make their products compliant. Product safety is a complex system. There's all sorts of regulations and considerations that go into making a product safe. And my background with the government agency that does product safety has set me up so that I can definitely provide something to help out businesses.
That's great. So how did you end up in product safety? Obviously with the government. So what got you there before you started out to product safety?
Well, I think it was just circumstance. My career kind of wasn't part of a grand plan. I had 35 years in the public service, the federal public service, and the first 10 years of that was in human resources, which I really enjoyed. And then an opportunity came up while I was working in the Attorney General's department for a new position in consumer affairs. And as it turned out, the skill set wasn't all that different. It was still, managing people. It was still applying regulations. It was still exploring how to make the system work well for everybody and striking the right balance between one side and another. So I had to learn on the job in product safety, and it took quite some time to do, of course. But over the years, I really built a level of understanding, expertise, and also network of contacts that made me want to stay in product safety, and I stayed there for the next 25 years.
25 years. Gee.
And I stayed there because I really enjoy it. It's a dynamic area. You never know what you're going to be working on from one day to the next, and it's constantly changing new products, new technologies. And you learn something every day. So, there's not that many jobs that you can say that.
No.
And it's meaningful, meaningful to the community to be able to help improve the system and reduce injuries.
And were there any highlights during that time you were there?
Oh, there were many highlights at the ACCC, which I really enjoyed working there. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission was where I did the bulk of the product safety work. That's a good place to work. And I was fortunate enough to get a chance to represent the country overseas as well. So I went to a number of overseas conferences, including being on the keynote speaker panel for the first product safety conference in China back in 2007. So that was a significant landmark, really. And lots of things that I did. We had quite a bit of influence, including one time when Christmas nearly got cancelled because a new law came in, and there was a chance that all the toys would have to come off the shelves for Christmas. But we managed to work a solution around for that one.
Wow!
And
so Gail saved Christmas.
Yes, that was it was a frantic time, but all worked out in the end.
So at some point you chose to retire, or you took an early retirement?
Took an early retirement, yes.
And what made you want to start Product Safety Solutions?
Well,
because you could have gone off and done what other people do and golf and travel.
Indeed, I could have. And I felt I was too young to stop working. I didn't want to stop working back then. By moving out of paid employment, especially in the government sector, I felt as though I had a little bit more freedom to do my own thing and make a contribution to the way that product safety can work in Australia and even beyond Australia, drawing on my experience up until then. So one thing I really wanted to do was get a bit creative by writing, and I set up the website with your assistance to use that to write blogs, blog articles, which all contribute to the body of knowledge and hopefully fill some gaps between people's understanding of the system and what, you know, information is otherwise out there.
So you've been writing blogs. How are you getting, how do you feel they're going in terms of any responses you get from them?
Look, I think I get a limited amount of feedback, I guess, but feedback I do get is very encouraging. I think that writing blog articles serves to establish me as an expert in my field. That helps with recognition by Google when people type in that they're looking for product safety advice. Will often take them to my website now, which is encouraging. I've now written, I think I've just passed 80 blog articles in 5 years I've been going. And as well as the blogs, I've also written a series of some ebooks, two separate white papers, and also produced some other material, including visual PowerPoints, some videos. And also I've got some audio podcasts where I do interviews like the one we're doing now.
So let's just talk about your podcasts for a moment. So who do you choose to interview and why do you choose those people?
Mainly I pick people who are established in their field who will may not be otherwise known or available to people wanting to learn about product safety. There's not a lot of infrastructure in product safety, and so there's not much way of formal education in the T system. So I want to kind of add to that body of knowledge. And I've taken the opportunity to talk to some experts from overseas as well as here in Australia. And I hope to do more in the future as well.
Now, you mentioned VET. Can you explain what that is again?
That's the vocational education system, vocational education training, I think it stands for. Learning how to do your job, and people might be familiar with the term Cert 4, Cert 5, or not Cert 5, sorry, diploma level. Cert 3 is the more entry level, and it's about getting training and qualifications in how to do the job that you're doing.
Okay, so this is really how somebody working in, say, retail gets their experience about product safety.
It turns out that when I looked into it, there's a Cert 4 you can do into dog grooming, but there is no Cert 4 in how to make sure a product is safe before it goes on the shelves.
Right. So does that mean that you get work with companies that are buying in things to help them figure it out?
Yes. I do face-to-face training courses for small businesses and large businesses. I've done a number of those. And also interested in exploring the idea of online courses for people as well.
So you want to help, so the people who are doing the job or people who, say, running the companies and need some advice?
Bit of both, but mostly it's for the people who are doing the job.
Okay. So coming back to having left the public service and now running a business, how do you see the difference in your roles compared to when you were working in the government and now you're working in your own business? Is there much difference between the two?
Well, I suppose working in an organisation with especially a government authority, there was a lot more structure and a little bit of constraint in what I could do, and now I'm a little bit freer to do that. I have to say I don't miss working in an organisation at all. Having done so for 35 years, I really enjoy the freedom. I mean, I miss having colleagues to talk to on a daily basis. But even that, I find I can make up for by staying in touch with a series of contacts and colleagues that I have in the wider community, product safety community.
And I think that's one of the issues that most people working for themselves in self-employment is, you know, you might be working from home or one of the hubs or something like that, but you're still on your own unless you've got a team. Is that really, I mean, you've mentioned about your network, so... Is your network growing, would you say?
Yes, it's always growing. In fact, I'm trying to be strategic in that context by tapping into the business representative organisations by way of associations like the Promotional Products Association, the National Retail Association, etc. And so that is a way to tap into the broader community, and through to their members.
So is that to get work, or is that to do the influencing that you want?
Yeah. Look, a lot of the time it's to do with my opportunity, well, firstly to contribute and secondly to bring about some influence to help guide people because, product safety in any business, product safety has to compete against a myriad other things. So it's not always front of mind, and because it's complicated, people tend to not focus on it quite often. And yet there's risks in avoiding product safety and compliance. So part of my objective is to make things simpler for people and to get it in the forefront in the first place.
So it sounds like you're getting the message out there about product safety. So have you had any major achievements in that area that you could talk about?
A few years ago, I looked at the advent of home-based 3D printers. And I thought, I wonder if there's any product safety issues that are associated with those. If you're able to print a toy, how does someone know that the toy is going to be safe? So I Googled around on it and nobody had written anything. So I decided to write a white paper myself. And it seemed like I was the only person in the world to have done that. And I did some conferences speaking about it for a while. And even still today, I'm getting regular downloads of that white paper. It seems like there's not been much written on it since then. So I consider that a significant achievement that I just jumped right into that one.
And is there another area that you're really passionate about that you're working on in product safety?
Oh, button batteries. Yes. Button batteries. Singularly the most complex issue that I've encountered in my 30-something years of doing product safety. What the problem there is that if children swallow the little coin-sized batteries, they can get stuck in their throats and causes an electrical current to activate and it'll burn through the flesh of your esophagus. It sounds a bit strange, but there's been many, many instances of it happening. It's caused 2 deaths in Australia. It's caused many more deaths overseas. And even still now in Australia, they've estimated it's around 1 serious injury a month requiring surgery for a child. The damage might have already been done by the time the surgery happened. So it's a really, really serious hazard. And I'm doing what I can to help people understand the need to do everything that's possible. You have to come at it from a multiple array of angles to try and address it. And one of those is making sure the products have secure battery compartments and that batteries themselves come in child-resistant packs. If that was consistently happening, we would dramatically reduce the exposure of children to batteries. It's unlikely we'll be able to eliminate it, though, because kids can it relies on parents and carers to make sure there's no batteries left lying in drawers or otherwise on the floor, and there's only so much you can do from that point of view. But I'm hoping to facilitate some better consumer education as well.
So you're getting the word out about product safety. You're doing some work in there as well. So maybe we talk about the business a little bit. So how do you describe your business? Is it a company or a...
I haven't incorporated. I have considered doing that from time to time, but decided against doing so. And so I'm just running as a sole trader, which works well for me. And I was originally charging GST because I thought it would look more professional. Turned out I don't think it really makes any difference, and it was only an extra lot of work to submit your... I've forgotten the name of the...
Oh, the BAS.
The BAS.
BAS statement. In Australia, we call it a BAS statement.
Yes. So it's working well for me, but I have, of course, got some good public liability insurance and product indemnity insurance, that sort of thing. So that's important.
Yeah, and especially, I guess, in that when you're giving advice, how do you go about your networking? You mentioned that you're fairly strategic about it. So tell us a bit more about how you approach your networking, which I'm assuming we could say is marketing as well.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely comes in the category of marketing. And, well, I use LinkedIn to liaise with people and to keep abreast of new developments. I post things on Twitter, but I don't follow Twitter very much. It's, you know, I find I can only do so many different aspects of social media. I do use Facebook to try and educate consumers, though. So that works quite nicely. And more on an actual individual personal level, a lot of my networking comes through me doing voluntarily participating on working groups and committees. And so I'm active in my contribution with them. And it's also especially, well, I suppose via email as well as the face-to-face meetings, people are there hearing what I've got to say and seeing firsthand the value that I can add. And I am working collaboratively with a lot of people who, you know, we're all there to pitch in and improve the resources that are available and the policies. Those people are often potential clients as well.
Yeah. So often what you're saying is a lot of your networking work is actually getting out there and working with your community. And you're not getting paid for this, but it's because that's part of your mission. You want to really get that message out there. And yes, it gives you work as well. Are you choosy about the sort of work you do?
Yes, I am. I like to be choosy. There's not a great deal that requests come in that I knock back, but I also have, as work, my network also serves as a range of associates that I can pass work on to if it doesn't suit me to do it for whatever reason. So that works quite well. And quite often, you know, those associates don't have the websites and the profile that I've built. And so arguably, I could be charging them for referrals. I haven't actually done it yet, but I could start doing it. And especially if there's, you know, a stream of referrals I was giving to any one of those associates.
So that's fantastic how you're getting all that sort of work. So what sort of work do you prefer to do in the product safety area?
Well, I guess it's a variety, really. I've been lucky enough to been invited to be an expert witness a few times for product liability cases and even one coronial inquiry or also a prosecution by government for breaching of the product safety laws. And I enjoy, those have been fairly short-term projects, but I've enjoyed delving into each issue at the time and researching it, then forming an opinion and providing advice. So that's fun to do. It doesn't sound fun because it's even if it's like it's injury related, it's to do with some serious consequences.
But,
I enjoy the opportunity to...
That type of work.
Yeah, to research and then write up a report. I do enjoy training. I enjoy designing the training, writing it, and then presenting it. And so there's always opportunities to get creative with how you actually do all of that and get good feedback straight away when you do the training.
No, that's excellent. Let's come back to the business. From that side of it, having been a public servant for 35 years and now you're running a business, what have you learned about business that you didn't know before?
Well, getting started wasn't as difficult as I'd anticipated, which is nice. You know, having no frame of reference and having just got trotted into work every day for 35 years and had a whole lot of infrastructure set up there and admin and so forth, I thought it might have been, you know, going out into small business might have been more complicated. But apart from a couple of elements, I've found it not too difficult. Bearing in mind, though, that I haven't had to rely solely on my business for my day-to-day income. So that's allowed me a lot of freedom to just take my time with things. I think if I had chased work, if I felt the need to chase work, I would have got a lot more work than I currently have. But at the moment, I like to keep the balance between paid work and my other passion work. couple of things that did present a bit of a learning curve and a challenge starting out. One was the insurance side and understanding how that works and what I needed to do and the implications of where I might be exposed. And the second one is, given the amount of profile work that I'm doing on my website, etc., and public speaking, public appearances and training, intellectual property is a challenging area to get your head around, understanding how to protect your own intellectual property, but also, and perhaps even more importantly, not breaching others' intellectual property. So use of photos, use of text and so forth, that is fair use and you have to understand in the context of your different needs.
Plus maybe contracts and legal documents.
Yeah. Well, I've, you know, some of my engagements have been relatively small scale and have been done on the simple exchange of emails. Other contracts have been a lot more lengthy, and it obviously depends on the client, but some of that working out. Oh, and that's the other thing that's always a challenge is setting your fees, working out how much to charge for things.
Mm.
One thing I did learn early on was the idea of trying to avoid charging by the hour and to charge based on value rather than estimate the number of hours that you would need and apply an hourly rate. I think it's better if you can understand what the client is wanting from you and then just say, well, I can do it for X amount.
Yeah.
And you might still put some caveats on that, but I think that's a good way to go.
Yeah, I think a lot of people find pricing a problem. Though somebody who's maybe recently left an industry may have some sense of what they can charge because, you know, a lot of professional women come out of a role where they have been hiring people, so that they're very lucky in that sense. They know what some of the rates are. So we've talked a little bit about that. So any books or courses that have helped you?
Well, I hadn't thought of one until we mentioned the values-based fees. And that's, I'm trying to think of the fellow's name. Alan Weiss comes to mind. But I need to check that.
All right. So what we'll do with that one is we'll put it in the show notes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we can put it in the show notes and so that people can just follow that up. So you've actually read a book that talked about that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. That was good. I mean, there's lots of online tutorials on YouTube and so forth for things like the technical side and the, you know, webinars and videos and what have you. There's a video blogger called Steve Dotto.
Okay, yep.
Who I found really helpful. And, you know, he does a lot of interesting material in a really, you know, refreshing way and explains things really well. So that's another I would recommend.
And have you gone to any paid courses or done some extra study or anything like that? And do you need to?
I'm a fan of the Australian Institute of Training and Development.
Right.
They run courses on training, but also on facilitating and adult learning and, you know, getting your message across. And so I've done a couple of courses and seminars that they run as well. They even did one on the concept of nudging recently that I went to. And because I'm trying to influence how people regard and act on product safety, I'm keen to learn about how to influence behaviour. There's a little organisation within Monash University in Melbourne called Behaviour Works, and I regularly go to their forums, which is, again, about changing people's attitude and just nudging behaviour along.
That's excellent. Now, would you recommend others consider self-employment like you've done?
Well, I'm really happy with where I'm at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with the way it all plays out and the flexibility it gives me. I work from home. And I set my own time, the amount of time I spend on work, and it gives me freedom to do other things, which is very good. So, yes, I felt reasonably confident that I would achieve what I wanted to achieve and be successful at it. And I'm generally an optimistic and confident person. Nonetheless, it's, you know, it was kind of stepping into the unknown a little bit. And the idea of just exploring that and talking to people that you trust and have confidence in was enough to give me the confidence to proceed when I first started. And I make sure that I maintain those contacts and use people as mentors as necessary. So I would encourage people to feel optimistic.
Well, you'd have to be optimistic, sure.
your own abilities. You don't have to be able to know everything before you start. Yep. That's really important. And don't let your fear of it not working according to, your ideal plan get in the way of you starting out. So do some good planning. I'm a big advocate of planning.
Mm-hmm.
And then take the step,
No, that sounds very, very good. Is there anything else that we haven't mentioned that you'd like to talk about? Or?
Well, I guess the enjoyment and success I've had with my business has been with me doing it as a solo operator. I did dabble in the idea of having a partnership recently with a couple of other like-minded colleagues, but I really was getting a couple of ideas that it just wasn't quite going to work out as I would have liked, and I was able to withdraw from it. So I guess that would be one word of caution, is that with partnerships, you might well have shared objectives and complementary skill sets, but you've got to make sure that you can work together when it actually comes down to the crunch of getting the work done. So if you were to look at doing a partnership, obviously do a lot of homework beforehand and maybe tread carefully by way of taking it slowly and not leaping into a incorporated business and that sort of thing.
Yes, where it could go. So what's the future look like for Product Safety Solutions now?
Well, quite a few of my contacts are starting to say, I'm now going off on this new venture and I'm going to direct lots of business your way. So things, my sort of the ripple effect of my networking is starting to show some serious returns, and that's encouraging. And I'm still I've got a couple of projects that I'm keen to do, one of which is the associations, which I've started on. And so if I can have some success there, then I'll be very happy.
That's wonderful. Gail, where do people find you then? If they want to contact you.
Certainly. Well, my website is the best spot, productsafetysolutions.com.au. Not to be confused with the American Product Safety Solutions, quite a separate, that's a chemical product advisory service. And my website has got my contact details, of course. I'm also, Product Safety Solutions is also on Facebook. And then you can find me by my own name on LinkedIn and Twitter.
That's wonderful.
Oh, and don't forget YouTube channel. Product Safety Solutions has a YouTube channel.
Right.
And the podcasts are available through iTunes and through Libsyn.
Oh, and on the website.
And on the website, yeah.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Well, Gail, thank you very much for participating today and all the best for the future.
Thanks very much, Nigel. I've been happy to do it.
Thank you for joining me on the Wisepreneurs podcast. I hope you found it both practical and interesting. You can find out more by visiting my website at wisepreneurs.com.au. Thank you again.